episode 105 of the TV Dudes podcast, recorded October 26, 2016. Not British enough.
Grant, how are you doing?
I'm all right.
I think we have great accents. What about you, Les?
Hip what?
Yes.
I took a tumble down the apples and pears.
So, someone listening is British.
And so offended right now.
They're like, what the fuck
is that? So offended right now, and rightly so.
They're probably not offended. They don't even think much of us. They're like, you guys are just terrible with your accents.
We've fallen further in their estimation.
They're over there going, y'all.
Whoa, bro. That's totally word.
So we are talking about... We're talking about a bunch of shows again.
Yeah.
Like each week, I'm like, okay, we're going to get back into our regular cycle. But no, the onslaught of a billion TV shows still continues to happen.
Yes, it does.
This week, we're talking about Dirk Gently and the Holistic Detective Agency.
That's sort of what the title is.
Almost.
I think I was pretty close.
It was pretty close.
We're talking about Westworld again, of course. We're talking about The Walking Dead's big controversial return. We're talking about My Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. And we're talking about... what's the last one? Black Mirror.
Yes, you got them all.
And a couple of those, Randy had a problem with them not being quite British enough.
No, I just was taken by the fact as I was watching them that Netflix has done this, and apparently BBC America is doing this, that these are very British shows. Like, Black Mirror is a very British show, and a lot of it takes place in England, but then when Netflix took it over... They Americanize it a bit, like the accents are gone, and there's British actors doing American accents for no real reason. There's stuff that's taking place in England, but not everybody's English. And then Dirk Gently, which is a British novel by Douglas Adams, of all people, which is as British you can get. Mm-hmm. Douglas Adams is pretty British. Like that's like a cup of tea being drunk by a pug wearing a Winston Churchill costume, British.
Yeah.
That's very British.
Very British.
Yeah, like if everyone in a Terry Pratchett novel suddenly had an American accent.
Yeah, it's really weird. And so Dirk Gently's still British, but everybody else is American because they've transplanted the whole thing to like San Francisco or something.
So are you saying that there's a problem in Hollywood with American washing?
Everything? I think they're American washing, yes.
Yeah, is that the term?
I think the weird thing for me is that I get transplanting things to a different culture for, you know, trying to get a wider audience, but... Is there really a segment of America that doesn't have some sort of love for British culture?
Randy, at 2 weeks out from the national election, is there really a person in this room who would ask that?
Oh my God, you're right.
There is totally a section of this country.
But do you think there are any Trump voters watching Dirk Gently?
No.
They were never going to be,
but
right?
But do you think the corporation behind Dirk Gently really, really wants that audience too?
I guess. It's just, yes. It's a delusion that I don't understand that, like, you're never going to get those people on Dirk Gently. Go ahead and be as
really
British
not.
As you want.
Well, really not.
It really reminds me of the story about when they were first making Harry Potter.
Yeah.
And it was Steven Spielberg who was going to try and make it, but he wanted to make it all in the U.S.
Oh, my God.
Cool American teens at a prep school kind of thing.
Can you imagine? Can you imagine how it would have been Avatar The Last Airbender all over again?
Been
people
tower
would have been
prep
pissed.
The movie.
I mean, I still imagine that he would make something that was watchable.
Sure.
But it would not be the same thing.
No,
no and
all.
It wouldn't have been Harry Potter at all.
No.
But, you know, in another universe, I'd get to watch that and I'd get to watch Simon Pegg's Ant-Man. And I'd just get to watch all these different movies. Not Simon Pegg. Edgar Wright's Ant-Man.
Yes.
Although Simon Pegg is Ant-Man, I'd watch that.
Though
you know Simon
person.
Pegg would have been in that somewhere.
Exactly.
Simon Pegg should have been the British Ant-Man.
Oh, he'd be terrible.
Yeah, it'd be great.
I'd love it.
Yeah, he should be Paul Rudd's like British cousin who comes over and puts on the Ant-Man suit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ant-Man 2, British Ant-Man. Britant.
Why don't they let us make movies?
I think I know why.
Because we're the TV dudes.
Yes.
I'm
Randy.
With Rowan Atkinson in Michael Douglas's role. Oh, this would be great. We should, yes.
Okay.
And you are?
Oh, I'm Les.
There we go.
He was too caught up in the Rowan Atkinson
thing. I was in the moment.
Thing.
It was just, yes.
It was such a good segue.
I'm Grant, I'm Randy, and I'm Rowan Atkinson.
Yeah, I was like, oh, what? Bold choice.
All right.
Bold choice.
A lot of people don't know that about me.
hey, so iTunes. If you guys want to help us out, you guys can go to the iTunes store. Give us a 5-star rating, write a review. It's an easy, free way to help us out. Go onto your parents' account if you don't have your own iTunes account. Go onto your grandparents' account, write a review. If you guys want to go review us elsewhere on the internet, you can also do that. Go ahead and go over to... What's a good site, Randy?
Go to Yelp.com and review a local business that sells TVs.
Yeah, and say, you know what? You guys should play TV Dudes podcast at your store, and I'd like this business a lot more.
Yeah.
Don't do that.
Don't do that. Still give 5-star reviews.
Yeah, give them a 5-star, and then you can write whatever you want. But yeah, please go do that if you guys want to help us out. Another way to help us out is over at patreon.com/TV Dudes. There you can make a per-episode pledge, and in exchange, you get bonus exclusive content from us. In fact, this week we have an early preview of an interview that Randy did.
Yeah.
With Janet Varney.
Yeah, Janet Varney, the voice of Korra on Legend of Korra, as well as playing Becca on You're the Worst. And she's got a new show, Stand Against Evil, that is coming up.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got an interview with her. It was a lot of fun. And Patreon listeners get an early peek at it.
Yeah, so we try and do good stuff for you people because you guys do good stuff for us. You make us rich.
We're so rich.
we're barely holding it together.
Barely holding it together. Yeah.
But we really appreciate it. And hey, guess what, Randy?
What?
We got a new patron.
Yeah, who is it?
You don't want to tell everyone who it is?
No, you tell me.
It's your best friend. Your best friend, Ted Griffin.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy.
Yeah, so we have a person who created a television show as one of our patrons.
One might say the best television show.
You would definitely say that.
Yep, one might.
Yeah. So welcome, Ted, and we are honored to have you there, and we'll see how long until we scare you off.
Honored is one word. Stunned was another. That was a strange turn of events, and yeah. I now the pressure is really on to not let our patrons down. as if it wasn't already, it's even more so now.
Yeah, pressure's on. Well, speaking, though, of Beach Cop Detectives and Terriers.
Yes.
What's our update?
So we are in the home stretch here. We're past the halfway point. We had
that finish line.
We
it's so far away. Oh, it's still Grant, in December.
I'm going to do 10 more interviews you have to edit. Is that cool?
It's fine. Yeah, it's fine. what's this liquid coming out of my eyes?
We had our interview with Ted Griffin go up this Monday, and I was really pleased with that interview, and I've gotten some good feedback on it. And then Episode 8 will be dropping. You will have heard it yesterday as this airs.
Yes.
With David Sotelo of ATX Fest. And we've got Michael Raymond James coming up next week.
Oh yeah.
So yeah, it's we're going full guns here. We're going big, and I'm about to record the last couple episodes here in November, and then we can get to editing those, and by December it'll all be over, Grant.
It'll all be over.
In the rear view.
I mean, it's fun. It's fun.
It is fun. And it's also a lot of work.
It's also a lot of work. But we decided to do 2 a week rather than 1 a week.
We've also been getting huge feedback from not just the fans who we're happy to hear from, but you know, Michael Raymond James was really kind about the show, and he's been listening to it.
Cast and crew, yeah. Have
been really kind to the show, and I really appreciate that.
Pretty awesome.
It's pretty awesome. It's better than I could have imagined.
Do you guys want to do some listener questions?
Let's do that.
Yeah. Let's do it.
All right, if you guys like us on Facebook, like us on Twitter, we put up a question post once a week. And our first question comes to us from Ross Brown, who says, are there any TV shows that are disliked by the majority of people, but that you like? And I think we come across this question occasionally, like, what show do other people hate that you like?
Well, it used to be Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but I broke free of that. Les, you got any?
Wait, which way did that go?
A lot of people like that, and you hate it.
No, a lot of people hate that show, and I liked it for a while. Remember? Early on, like, I was defending that show.
Yeah, no, I defended that in the first season as well, and then there were...
We were so wrong.
Oh, you're not talking about critic audience. No, it was still
bad. It's bad looking back.
Yeah.
I feel like Gallivant, for a minute, I was enjoying the crud out of, and I couldn't... I didn't know a single person, I think, who was really digging it. I think you had watched the pilot of the first season.
I was not into it.
And it struck me the polar opposite, but I don't know that so much counts as one people like you're the only other person I really knew that watched it and you just happened to not like it, but everybody else was like it's a what?
Yeah, it definitely flew under the radar. But I do know people who loved it. I have a few friends who loved it. You're one of them, and one of my friend Mandy loved that show, and I kept wanting to go back because I like musicals, I like comedy, but couldn't do it.
Dude, I'm not sure. I mean, I liked Legends of Tomorrow season one, but I think we had discussed this before, it would be awful and just like, eh, this is not a great show. And then, oh, hey, Firestorm.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then we were good for like 15 or 20 minutes. Yeah. And then, yeah.
We're both grading on a curve on that show.
Yeah.
I don't ever have anything I don't like or I like that other people don't because I only watch really good stuff.
Is that true?
No, I also watch Project Runway. And a lot of people do not like Project Runway. I get it. But man, I love that show. It's so good. All right, next question comes to us from Kyle Volte, who says, hey, TV dudes, while the 2016 U.S. election cycle has been horrific,
yes,
it has been a boon to Saturday Night Live. What would you point to as your all-time favorite political satire? I will always have a soft spot in my heart for Spitting Image out of the U.K. Also, Randy, did my suggestion on how to view Legends of Tomorrow improve your viewing experience?
It did. And this Kyle's the one who gave me the suggestion to view it as someone playing a superhero role-playing game. It really does make it make a lot more sense. Like, oh, that's just that player, you know, going off and doing their thing. That makes sense. Yeah. It or the crazy plot twists or the DM like scrambling as fast as he can to keep up with you're going to time travel to where? Yeah, okay, this happens. It's so much better. That is the way to watch that show. Yes, it's a fantastic suggestion, and I think everybody should go to that suggestion if you're going to watch Legends of Tomorrow.
So at the end of the episode, they should just cut to Troy and Abed like
yes,
rolling dice.
Yes.
And
just throwing out the empty bottles of Mountain Dew.
Yes.
And like, yeah, that'd be it. Yeah.
Favorite political satire, I guess, on SNL or otherwise?
Yeah. I mean, SNL does this really well. I don't remember where they were talking about this. Maybe keeping it 1600 somewhere else, but SNL had Phil Hartman playing Bill Clinton as sort of this, always eating, kind of charming but charming slob, and that was always entertaining. You had Will Ferrell's George W. Bush.
Will Ferrell's George W. Bush,
which was spectacular.
You go back to Chevy Chase's Gerald Ford.
Yes,
I mean
Tina Fey's Palin.
Yes.
Was fantastic.
Well, and Fey's Palin and Amy Poehler's Hillary Clinton played wonderfully off each other.
Yeah.
But I think my actual favorite Hillary Clinton that they've done is
Kate McKinnon.
Yeah. Kate McKinnon is killing it.
That she is great in it. I think actually Spitting Image about Nails Mine because I couldn't think of Spitting Image's name, but I was thinking of the Genesis video for Land of Confusion, which is pretty much those puppets.
Is it really? I didn't know that.
They at least look, they have the same style.
That was British enough.
Right? Righto.
Okay, let's move on then. Jonathan Haptemichael says, hey dudes. Black Mirror uses its episodic anthology format really well by exploring different themes with different characters each episode. What type of story would you like to see done in a future episode? And any celebrities you want in it? I would like to see an episode that takes place only on someone's laptop screen, like the movie Unfriended, but not involving something stupid like an internet ghost.
You know, it's funny, before this run of Black Mirror that I was a little disappointed in, and we'll talk about that, I would have said, I don't want to throw any ideas. I trust Charlie Brooker because everything he came up with in the first two seasons I loved. And so I didn't ever see it coming.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I think the thing Black Mirror does the best is when they explore a social media trend or something that's in sort of cutting edge technology, something about self-driving cars, I think, which I think is an emerging thing. I'd love to see Brooker's take on that. I think.
That could be pretty cool.
Or maybe a take on the service economy of Uber and all those kind of things. Not necessarily just car services, but all those things that are like the nobody getting paid, nobody owns anything, you know, internet app economy, the grocery shopping app, all that kind of stuff. Something like that in Black Mirror style I'd love to see too.
I was just reading about this future technology that will allow people to walk into any sort of retail store and they'll just be cameras that ID you. And you'll grab whatever you want and just leave, and it'll automatically charge you. And
they have
and,
that now. It's called shoplifting.
Well, exactly. Like I want to see something like in the world of that where shoplifting gone awry because there's all this stuff that still IDs you.
And you get home, there's this bill.
Yeah. You're like, ah, shit.
Oh, man.
I owe a lot of money.
Yeah, we'll talk more about Black Mirror in this season later, but I feel like the fact that nobody owns anything, the rental economy of all our music being on streaming. It's all great until your internet goes down and you realize that you don't have any music in your home or any movies yes. or any TV or anything. Or when something like, I can't remember the name of the ebook company,
Audiobooks?
No, ebook. There was an ebook company a few years ago.
Yeah.
That went out of business and the DRM jerked the books off people's devices.
Yeah, ew. They learned you didn't earn
it. Does
that
mean what I think?
You don't
own
anything.
Yes, they jerked
anything.
It off.
Yes, that was a bad turn of phrase. You see, now, if we had been in England, that would have gone over fine.
Yeah. In England, they call it a petch toss.
Yes, now if I'd say that it had wanked it off, a whole different thing.
All my 50 Shades of Grey books, they really jerked it off there.
No, but all the books suddenly disappeared out of everybody's devices, and like, yeah, you thought you bought a book. No.
Yeah, you didn't buy anything.
So I would love to see Black Mirror take that, because they... One of the things they do so well is go just a hair past something you've thought of and into that scary, like, oh, crap, we would do that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Mr. Robot sort of tackled that with the smart home and the dangers of smart homes.
Oh, yeah.
That's a Black Mirror type approach, too.
Well, I mean, it's like if you told me something crazy, like someone was going to take over all the Wi-Fi connected light bulbs and dumb shit like that and shut down a major DNS server in the East Coast.
That would never happen.
That
I don't
would
know
never
what
happen. Yeah. Everybody's crap printer won't take the internet down.
Do you guys have anybody you'd want to see on this show? Like names or people that...
What about John Hamm?
He's already been on it.
Shit!
I really don't. Black Mirror works... And sci-fi in general works best for me when you don't pull me out of the... I'm terrible
with these
phrasings. When it doesn't pull me out of the world by like, oh, hey, it's John Hamm.
Yeah, I agree. And the funny thing is, some of my favorites, like Haley Atwell, is in my favorite Black Mirror, along with Donald Gleason.
Yes.
But I didn't know either of them that well at that point.
I still think of Donald Gleason as the guy from that.
So they're both great, but I hadn't... I did spend that entire episode going, who the hell is that? And then realized it was Agent Carter. But she doesn't look like Agent Carter at that point. It's different enough. So I like people who are just on the edge of celebrity, maybe. But I don't like I don't want Jennifer Lawrence in Black Mirror.
No,
I don't want people I recognize.
You don't want Chris Pratt?
Everyone loves Chris Pratt. Sure, put Chris Pratt in anything. That's cool.
There
Whatever.
We go. Okay.
But the same as the original casting for Star Wars. I mean, they didn't go with celebrity. I mean, they couldn't have afforded celebrities on the first one. But I like that they've kind of tried to keep that up a little bit. They're not casting famous people in the new Star Wars. Sell me on these characters, not on, you know, John Travolta as person I don't know. I'm not going to remember that new dude's name. I'm going to remember John Travolta.
Definitely agreed. I'm right there with you.
All right, let's get one last question here. This one comes from Zach McLernan, who says, Crazy Ex-Girlfriend is yet another great show that has been doomed to Friday, the TV elephant graveyard. What causes this to happen to shows, and what is the decision process, in your opinion, that a network takes to Friday a show? Vice canceling it.
I think Crazy Ex-Girlfriend has two problems. One is that it's a musical romantic comedy with an ironic title, which is really asking for trouble. Like, the fact that it got as much critical acclaim and ratings as it did is kind of a miracle. It's not doing well in its second season. But also, it's on the CW, and the CW has so much programming that something's going to go on Friday night, and it's going to be the lowest rated show.
I frankly didn't realize this was on the CW, and backing up, things still air on specific days?
I know, right?
I mean, I know that's still a thing, but it somehow still strikes me as odd that like things have a real day that they're like on and someone watches them like right then.
And those numbers that they get matter.
And that's the only numbers they care about.
They're caring about them less and less, it seems, in certain outlets. But I mean, I think that with a show like Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, didn't it just win some awards?
It did. Here's the other thing. The CW app is a revolutionary app because there's no cost involved. And there's a thing on there. I haven't read it, but there's a thing on there about Nielsen ratings. Like, they are using the CW app for ratings.
Oh, I didn't read that part, but yes, I love their app.
That's why they're giving away for free.
I don't know how their contracts read with the... I always assumed that we weren't getting a la carte television, or I wasn't getting a pure Roku channel that didn't require me to tie to Spectrum or put in a code for UVerse or something. Because there was a contract somewhere that basically ensured that this middleman could stay alive.
Right.
Because there should not be a middleman between NBC Universal and me.
Right.
They should directly sell me episodes of whatever they make.
Yeah.
But there is a middleman, as if as if I really need spectrum between me and them. And so I was really astounded when the CW app, well, when they announced that CW parted ways with Hulu, and I wondered how am I going to get my CW shows, because CWC is not great.
Yeah.
But yeah, the CW app, it just shows me commercials. It's like a free Hulu. Yeah. You know, you're selling me ads. You're showing me commercials. They could pick them better.
I will. Yeah, sure. I could. I would love to not see the same ad four
times.
That's
an algorithm issue, though. Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, I guess I think that, I don't know if this is true, but if you look at with FX, they were talking with John Landgraf in this Seppenwall, I think, article a few weeks back that we were discussing.
Mm-hmm.
And he was talking about how back in the age of Terriers, you know, those numbers really mattered. And that's why that show got canceled. But nowadays, they kind of bet on what they think has a certain prestige value or something that's doing something new and innovative, and they'll kind of bet on that and let that show run its course, like The Americans. The Americans should have been canceled a long time ago based on its ratings.
Yeah.
It does not get big numbers,
yep.
And it probably costs a bit. But over time, it's just gotten better and better, and word of mouth has spread, and people are all kind of tuning into this. It's paying off for them to some degree. And that might be the case with Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. I mean, this is winning awards at the Emmys.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe they can afford to put it on the Friday time slot and just kind of let it coast because of what else it gains them in the other markets.
Well, and I still think of the Friday time slot as what it is traditionally. It is the death knell time slot. Like, it's almost as if the network wants to kill the show. They move to Friday. Like, hey, we haven't canceled you yet, but you're going to die.
Yeah.
And
it's the hospice care of network time
slots. Exactly. And but that was really only true when there was literally no other avenue to get it out there. I mean, the networks had 7 days in the week and a certain amount of prime time airtime, and that was it. I mean, if you didn't get it in one of those time slots, there was no getting it to the audience. And that's not true anymore. So I wonder if it's true what Randy was saying, that there's only so many spots. They have a lot of original content, actually more than I realize now that I look at their app.
Yeah.
So somebody's got to be on Friday.
Yeah.
But Friday maybe isn't as bad a thing anymore because there's so much less of the populace that are watching it when it airs on Friday.
Right.
Friday used to be the best slot when it was X-Files.
Yeah.
That was a prestige spot for X-Files.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I was actually specifically about to say that. In high school, I did not ever get to watch X-Files because I was in marching band, and that was when ball games were.
You were just too cool.
And so,
so either
you had to set your VCR or you were going to miss it.
I'm kidding. No one ever says
absolutely
cool kids
nobody thought we were cool. That wool uniform. Mm.
What about the tuba player? Tuba player's a badass, right?
Yeah, dude.
He's the badass.
Oh, the low brass was where it was at, for sure.
So we're doing the news here, and I would like to laud ScreenRant.com for an article that I believe is the biggest bombshell news that says nothing at all for like eight paragraphs. I am impressed by this story, because the headline, it's a big show. It's a big story. Mad Men creators' new TV show lands at Amazon.
Yeah.
Matthew Weiner of Mad Men is doing his next show on Amazon Prime. That's big news. It is also the only fact they have to write this entire story.
And they went so long.
Oh my God,
Randy, I'm so glad you mentioned that. I was reading this article and thinking, oh man, I don't want to meta talk about how it was written, but really, that's the most convoluted nothing of an article.
They've got
the headline's it.
They've got a quote from him, and the quote is, "In a time when there are so many options for entertainment, it's been tremendous to see how Ray Price and Amazon have taken center stage by distinguishing themselves through bold choices. I am truly excited to have this opportunity to work with risk takers like them and Harvey and the Weinstein Company, who have a proven, longstanding commitment to creative voices and innovation." That quote means nothing.
Somewhere on Google, I guarantee you can find a machine-generated... if you need a quote as a movie director, like there's a mission statement generator that'll make that quote.
There's not even a pitch.
How might you condense that paragraph that he said, oh, how about Mad Men's creator has a new TV show landing on Amazon, which is the title of the article.
Yeah, that's
exactly
it. That's all there
when
is.
When I got done reading it and I went back to the, I skipped back a page and went, oh, yeah. Wow, the headline was it.
It's an all new drama series set in the present day. That is literally all we know. It's part of a $70 million deal. That's all we know.
Yeah.
Here's what I thought was kind of interesting, though. Matt Weiner said previously that he doesn't like the binge format. He doesn't like all episodes dropping at once, which means that Amazon, either one of them's going to have to give.
Yeah.
Because Amazon releases stuff all at once.
Yeah, that's true.
Or they might make a deal with him where they're like, hey, we'll release in a weekly format for you. I mean, Netflix has done that with one or two shows, I believe. I can't remember which ones
they
did.
I thought all their stuff was dropped.
I thought they dropped all their stuff. I know Hulu doles it out.
Maybe it's when they're concurrently releasing shows like in England that are like coming out.
Oh, that
like
might
the
be.
Next day.
Yeah.
Then they'll release it one day after.
But yeah, I mean, I'm interested. I'm curious, but
but what is it?
We know nothing. And yeah. Like I say, I think that was kind of an impressive bit of news.
I was interested enough to read like 10 paragraphs from.
So they got us. Yeah. They got us.
Gotcha. Good.
Dwayne Johnson and Will Ferrell are doing a wrestling comedy at Fox. Before you get too excited, they're producing.
Although this seems like it's kind of based on Dwayne Johnson's life, like, you know, coming out of college football and then moving into the professional wrestling circuit.
Yeah.
And, you know, how's that guy doing?
I think
he made the
right.
most money of anyone last year. He's the highest paid actor. Is that
true? That's interesting. It's I don't know how that's going to work. So far, I've not been super into Ballers, which Dwayne Johnson is doing. And Will Ferrell's hit miss for me on TV. No, I know, but I feel like his voice is in there. And I don't know if I find his voice all that interesting.
Well, it kind of reminds me in a way of Entourage, which was based off of Mark Wahlberg's life.
Right.
And, you know, Mark Wahlberg, he's about as boring as you get. But that show was kind of good in the first couple of seasons.
But, I forget. You're right. I'd forgotten that. And then, I forgot how much I want to punch Mark Wahlberg in the face.
Yeah, he's
Entourage just kind of makes you want to do that.
He's just a douchebag. Yeah, but that guy produces on a lot of like good shows.
Yes, he does.
On HBO
yes, he does.
And they're also doing that show Glow, which is the glamorous ladies of wrestling.
That I'm excited about.
Now, that actually looks fun.
That's on Netflix. Yeah,
and this might be fun as well. But based on that headline, there's very little I would care less about. I'm really hit or miss on Will Ferrell, and I really like The Rock, but he's not actually in this.
Yeah.
And I'm with you. I haven't watched Ballers, but I don't know that a Rock-produced thing is as appealing to me as something that Dwayne Johnson's in. Like, I'm looking forward to the Black Adam movie.
Yeah, sure.
But I don't know.
Yeah, you got to get back to me when Mike Schur gets involved. Then I'm interested.
This is definitely the deep impact to Glow's Armageddon. I get it. But I still kind of want to see what's going on.
Yeah, I saw both of those, so sure.
Because Morgan Freeman might be here.
Disappointing news for Star Trek fans. Brian Fuller has stepped down as Star Trek Discovery showrunner. And this I kind of saw coming because they delayed Discovery. He's working on American Gods. And I remember thinking at the time, like, how is he going to do both shows? Well, it turns out he's not.
Yeah. Well, when they still haven't announced, I'm so glad they pointed out in the article, they still haven't announced casting for the lead.
Nope.
Have they announced casting for anyone on that show? But I know they definitely haven't cast the captain.
No, they haven't given us any casting.
Which was getting a little weird.
I was hoping it was going to be Lee Pace.
That would be wonderful.
That'd be great.
But, or kid, what's her name?
They have announced that Gretchen Berg and Aaron Herberts, who were directing, they're taking over showrunning duties. They were the executive producers. And here, in a sentence that will make any sci-fi fan's blood run cold, writer-director Akiva Goldsman is expected to join the series in a top creative role.
No.
Yeah.
No,
you remember Akiva Goldsman, right?
Fuller said
he wrote Batman and Robin.
Fuller said everything right at comic. I mean, I think they specifically said that in the article. Like, he really did. Like, everything that came out of his mouth was pretty good at Comic-Con in terms of like, oh, you get Star Wars or
and
you get Star Trek.
And it's down to his schedule. It was this or American Gods, and he chose wisely American Gods because CBS really, they need this to be a hit.
Yeah.
I mean, they're trying to launch their streaming network, and if it's not great, which with this cast, with this people behind, I don't know if it can be.
I mean, maybe he's still kind of overseeing stuff enough.
That's the hope.
It sounds like he's more stepped back. But he's doing Amazing Stories, and he's also doing American Gods.
Yeah.
So I really hope he's not entirely uninvolved. I know didn't he write the first two episodes? He's writing the first two episodes?
Yeah, and I think that'll still be going on. But I don't know. This was definitely worrisome.
That's worrisome.
Yeah.
It was worrisome when they didn't actually say it was going to be on CBS in the first place and that they were going to try to use it to launch an untested, unproven streaming service. And this is even more worrisome.
Yeah.
I wonder if this is going to get delayed another year and evaporate or what.
Well, if it gets delayed another year, they could bring Brian Fuller back on board.
Right.
But I think by then he'll be on it. I think American Gods is going to be a huge hit. And that's
it looks wonderful.
He's going to be doing that for a few years.
I can't wait for my Mad Sweeney spinoff.
But there's good news from Jessica Jones season two. Unless you're a male director. But Jessica Jones season two is going to be directed entirely by women, which I think is really interesting and really important because we've talked about how the voices behind the scenes have remained, even as the in front of the camera gets more diverse, diversity behind the camera is still struggling, and it's nice to see them sort of making strides.
Yes.
I hope they get a different director for each one, too. Give it like a bunch of women like a bigger pushing chance.
Yeah,
in the industry.
I'm curious who all they don't name them all. I don't think. I'll tell you what I'm hoping for. I'm hoping Michelle McLaren is doing an episode.
I'm hoping they fix the pacing on all of these Marvel.
Yes, ditto.
Yes.
Netflix shows.
Yes,
just either pack more stuff into all of these or shorten it.
Yeah.
Well, and like on the Matthew Weiner thing, it's an 8-episode deal. It was like, yay!
Yeah, 8-episode.
There you go.
Good. But I think what Grant is saying is that male television shows get 13 episodes, so women should really only have 10 or 8.
That's exactly.
Is that what you're saying?
Well, it's 70%. Yeah.
Send all your angry mail to Grant Davis at thetvdudes.com.
Grant Davis at grantdavis.supersexist@thetvdudes.com.
Ava DuVernay at doing Queen Sugar just recently did this as well. Like it's all women directing those, correct?
Oh, I think you're right. Yeah. Yeah.
And so I'm wondering if this is going to double up on some of those or broaden it even more.
I think Game of Thrones just made sure that they had all dudes directing.
That's probably true.
Yeah.
You're reaching out to the dude audience.
Well, it's good that they get represented.
One last story. We always like every week in TV Dudes, we like to check in with Business Insider and see what they have to say. Last week it was about the stock market. Week before that, they were talking about microchips. This week, it's Business Corner.
Crazy kids, what are they up to?
No, they actually have a TV story, which is really interesting. AT&T just announced that its streaming TV package, DirecTV Now, will include more than 100 channels for $35 a month. It includes mobile data, unlimited mobile data for your TV viewing. Mm-hmm. So basically, this is like digital. It's streaming. It's like a Hulu type thing, but it's a TV package.
Interesting.
And it undercuts, like Slingbox is $20 for 25 plus channels. The Sony PlayStation View is $55 for about 100 channels. This seems to be the next thing that's coming is the sort of the new cable package that's like less channels but a cheaper price. I don't know that this is where I want to go. I kind of like the a la carte mode, but a la carte's going to get expensive if everybody keeps dropping out. And if they become an aggregator pops up that's not $100 a month, they may figure out all the people who are cord cutting may go back to like, I don't know what you call that, going back on the wire. I don't know what that's called.
Yeah, I don't know.
If they have it set up where not only can I pay, but then I can select my 25 channels that I want.
Right.
That'd be great.
Yeah, that's really all we want. AT&T says DirecTV is basically, it's pay TV as an app is what they're saying. I don't know.
I'll be interested to see how it goes. I mean,
I'm curious. Yeah.
You remember when data packages launched, right? I mean, with the launch of the iPhone and they were just insanely worked. And then that changed pretty quickly as the market kind of pushed on it. Like, unlimited data became a thing. And so I wonder what this will look like a year after it launches. Or 2 years after it launches.
That's what I'm wondering. Is this the start of a new trend?
Because there was an article, I think on IO9 or Gizmodo or whatever, about the total cost of a la carte streaming and how outrageous this could potentially get if everybody keeps dropping out and breaking off and becoming their own thing.
Yeah, that's the worry.
And so, I mean, it could really get ridiculous, but at the same time, I kind of feel like this is cable as an encyclopedia salesman, like running back up to my door and going, but what if I look all of it up for you? I'm like Google. I'm the same as Google.
I have people skills.
Yes. We'll be right back.
right, guys. The first show we got to talk about. I know you guys have all been waiting for this. Walking Dead.
Holy shit.
Yes, I cannot believe that Negan, man.
Oh, it was so nuts.
You know what, guys? This is interesting, but let's flash back to what we thought about Black Mirror.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah, okay. So Black Mirror is on Netflix, and I love Black Mirror. I think it's I think the first two seasons are some of the best TV ever done. I think that the Christmas special with Jon Hamm is really, really good. And my expectations were as high as they could possibly have been for this Netflix release. Mm-hmm. And I was bound to be disappointed, and I was.
Yeah, you were pretty it was six episodes, right?
It's six episodes, and I loved exactly one of them.
Which one?
San Junipero, which I don't know if either of you guys have watched.
That is one I've not watched.
Okay. Here's the thing about Black Mirror is an anthology show, mm-hmm. just like Easy was. And just like Easy, I don't recommend watching all of it. I would jump around. I wouldn't start
just jump to the one with the threesome.
I wouldn't just jump to the one with the threesome. Yeah.
Okay.
I would not start on the first episode of Black Mirror. You don't have to. There's no connective tissue. They're all unrelated. Mm. Watch San Junipero first. It is the strongest one. It's really good. I don't want to say too much about
Shouldn't you have that one at the end?
I guess. I don't know. Maybe.
You're all disappointed, but end on a good note.
I kind of felt the same. I knew going into a new season of Black Mirror that there was no way that I wasn't going to be slightly disappointed because, yes, the first two seasons of Black Mirror are Charlie Brooker running full throttle. They're the most uncomfortable, stay with me, like reading the Velt over and over and over for the first time somehow.
Yeah.
Like every episode of Black Mirror had that like, oh God.
Yeah. They make you think about things. Like they put you in your head to think about anything from someone dying to how your technology interfaces with you and how your memories work, that kind of stuff.
And I can't remember the name of the episode, the one with Donald Gleason that we were discussing.
I think it's called Be Right Back.
Yeah. That one actually begins with a take on technology and then goes a different direction.
Yeah.
And that was missing for me in this entire season. Because they don't have any connective tissue, it didn't matter how I watched them. I just started with the first one.
Yeah.
Which is about social media and a society that has moved towards likes being everything, where 5-star ratings and then getting lower rated.
Yeah.
So if you drop below like a 3-5, you weren't going to be employed or you weren't going to live in the cities.
Yeah, your life just kind of sucks.
And then, of course, there's these Savage Land kind of people who don't give a fuck.
Yeah.
And are just drunk and say whatever and who cares. And it felt so earnestly on the nose. There was no subtlety. They ran straight forward with their premise, and at the end of it, it didn't feel like a Black Mirror.
Can I explain what I think the biggest problem is? You just explained the entire premise in like 5 minutes, less than that, and they took like 30 minutes to set the premise that we'd all gotten.
Yes.
And that's a problem throughout with all of it. Like the premise is clear really early on and they keep at it. And I think the problem is that Netflix, Alan Sepinwall mentioned this in his review and I read his review before I watched any of it and he was sort of down on it. And I'm like, I'm sure he's wrong because I love this show. It can't be. He was 100% right. The problem is Brooker is doing whatever he wants in terms of content and that kind of thing. But he did have restrictions when he made it for Channel 4. He had commercial breaks. He had a time limit. He had an editor, I'm sure. This is Netflix saying, run an hour and a half if you want to. No, don't do that.
Yeah, I think anybody that's ever been in a creative class, like in college or an art class or anything, that the boundaries kind of make the piece work.
Yes.
You need a wall to bounce against.
Yeah.
And we see that in movies and TV shows all the time where someone's given full creative freedom and they get enough rope and hang themselves.
Yeah, exactly. And sometimes it works out. Sometimes you get something like True Detective Season 1 or a lot of Fargo, which feels very sort of let them do whatever they want, let the time run. And sometimes you get Sons of Anarchy when it runs an hour and a half for no good reason.
Mm-hmm.
So I had seen like two episodes of Black Mirror prior to this.
Yep.
And so I'm like, okay, I'm just going to jump into season 3 and start watching it.
Yeah.
And I started watching and the first episode has the guy with the contact lenses and a little grain in his ear.
Yeah.
And he's kind of looking back through his wife's life. And I got to the end of the episode and realized that wasn't season 3 I watched. That was the last episode of season 1.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh shit, I don't have, I only have another hour. So I was able to watch the Dallas Bryce Howard episode.
Yeah.
And
which
I thought it was okay.
Yeah. None of them are bad. Like, they're all perfectly entertaining hours or slightly over of television.
But it's not up to the same standards.
It's not up to the standard. And there's interesting ideas at the heart of every one. Like, all the concepts are good, whether it's the one about the soldiers, whether it's the one about the VR game that is the second episode.
That one I actually really enjoyed.
Yeah. I liked it, but I thought it took too long to get to its point again. And I thought it didn't really sell its ending for me.
It twisted too hard, and then its ending felt like the way Tales from the Crypt used to feel. Yeah. Like you guys just got tired of this episode and made the meanest joke you could.
Yeah.
Boom, credits.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. And there's interesting. The last one is an hour and a half long, and has Kelly McDonald from Boardwalk Empire, mm-hmm. and a few other notable people in it. You'll recognize them, as well as some people I didn't recognize. And it plays like kind of a state of play style BBC mini movie. It's like an hour and a half long, and it's got a technological thing at its heart.
Is the best one you said?
No, the best one's San Junipero. This one is interesting. It's probably my second favorite, but it is definitely too long. It's an hour and a half, and it feels more of a piece with something like what's the British the detective show where Doctor Who investigates a murder?
Broadchurch.
Broadchurch. Thank you. That was the best description ever. I'm glad you got that because I needed the help. But it feels more like something like that. There's a technological bent to it, but it feels like Inside British Crime. And it was weirdly off tone for Black Mirror. It does go to that dark place, and I was interested to see what it did. But it's one of those things that starts from here's a problem that technology might solve, and here's the problem that might create. And it kind of takes too long to get to it and goes at it from a weird angle. San Junipero, I don't really want to give away too much because the heart of that is kind of the surprise, the reveal of it. But the thing I really loved about it is it captures the period piece of the 80s really well. It's got Cameron from the show. I'm not getting show names tonight. AMC's
Halt and Catch Fire.
Yes, thank you. It's got her playing a girl in the 80s, which is kind of on the nose, but
I
works.
I really like that actress.
And she's great, yeah. And it's got Gugu Mbatha-Raw from the little known show, I think, Undercovers, but she's great. And the two of them are sort of having a relationship in the 80s, and there's definitely more to it, but I don't want to reveal what the reveal is. But it's one of those that made me think, like, oh, wow, that's interesting to think about. It had me spinning off in that direction, like, oh, what that technology look like and that kind of thing. And it's also just a really entertaining story with a couple of great characters, but that's the exception that proves the rule in this case, and that's kind of too bad.
And I do feel like I need to stress that, and whether this is a statement on how bad sci-fi in general is on television right now or something, yeah. or what, none of these episodes are bad.
No, they're
that
all
I watched,
good.
Or at least the three that I watched, they were all fun.
Yeah.
They all do the Black Mirror thing of taking a premise of technology that kind of skeeves me out, but that I think we will definitely do. If presented with that technology.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Like where if they were going to have a Black Mirror on unlimited porn on somebody's contact lens and all of society just sit down and die. Like, yeah. That seems like a Black Mirror premise. And I would watch that and go, oh, crap.
Yeah.
We're going to do that.
You know, if you got to go.
And so all of these episodes kind of do that. They just don't do it as well to me as seasons 1 and 2. And whether that's just me being a curmudgeon and wanting season 3 to get off my lawn, I don't know. But it's already been renewed for season 4.
Yeah.
We'll
see
hopefully
where it goes. Come back stronger. The thing is, yeah, like you say, it's not that it's bad. It's that Black Mirror is such great sci-fi that my expectations were pretty high and I did not clear them.
It's just not British enough.
It's not British enough.
All right, well, let's go ahead and jump over to Walking Dead. No, wait.
Wait.
Let's hold off a little bit more on Walking Dead.
Yeah.
Because we want to talk about Dirk Gently and the Holistic Detective Agency.
Did you guys watch this?
Yes.
Yeah.
I loved this.
Yes. So, Randy, was this the Tick episode you wanted?
This is the Tick episode I wanted.
I felt like through the entirety of Dirk Gently, I was going, wow, this is the tone that Tick meant to hit.
Yes, you're right. That's totally right.
This is so bug nuts absurd.
Yeah.
And, like, I kept watching this. I'm like, okay, at a certain point, I feel like Elijah Wood's little typecast as this character.
So yeah.
Yes.
It felt very much like who he is in Wilfred.
But it was funnier than Wilfred.
But it's funny. Yeah. It's funny, period.
It's fun. This was
really
fun.
Enjoyed. And I realize Max Landis is definitely a problematic person or personality. The interview he did with Sally Sells, or I'm blanking on the name, Shelley yeah. Sells, where he talked about being single in LA is pretty terrible. But I really, despite that, I really enjoy Max Landis movies. I really enjoyed American Ultra. I saw it in the theater.
Energy about
yeah.
it.
Yes.
With what he makes. That's kind of really engaging.
I haven't read his most recent Superman comic, but I've heard it is amazing.
I've had people who really enjoyed it, yeah.
And I really dug Dirk Gently, despite him moving it to America, despite him doing several things that should have made this really kind of a scary proposition for me. Yeah. Elijah Wood's character does not exist in the novels.
Oh, really?
He does not have an assistant, but it works as a great in on the show.
You need a POV character, sure.
And him looking at it midway through and going, "I'm not your Watson, asshole," was the most... audience line I've heard from a character on a yeah. show in a long time.
Well, I love him. He basically, he's like, no, it doesn't matter. The universe is the side you're involved. So even if you don't get involved, you're still in it.
Yeah.
That was so great.
So whereas, Les, you summed up that one episode of Black Mirror in like two sentences, how would you sum up this episode?
Pitch Dirk Gently, Les.
Oh. and
it's a bit more difficult.
Really can't. You introduce a lot of characters. There's so much weird stuff that happens. I mean, the Rowdy Three.
Yeah.
There are four of them. I am aware of that. I cracked up. It's like, I'm fully aware of that there are four of them.
How about the military guys? I've got the shot. Take the shot.
Oh, when he turns around, just slaps crap out of him. Like, stop aiming a gun at the primary.
I died laughing the first time they show him, and he's like, don't take the shot. Take the shot. And he shoots. Died laughing.
So I'll give it a shot. So Elijah Wood starts off as this just hapless bellhop at a hotel
yep.
who's just moving through life very bored, and all of a sudden things get really weird in his day. His landlord's going bug nuts on him. There's a murder in the hotel where he works, and not only a murder, but like potentially a big clawed monster.
There's a good chance that Elijah Wood was involved in this murder in the future.
There's time travel going on. Yeah, he thinks
there's a time travel moment. I mean, literally any show with time travel, like I shouldn't even admit this out loud because the networks are listening and they've got my money. Anything with time travel, I will watch it.
Yeah.
And then there's a woman being held captive, and she's just, that's what we see. That's,
and yes, apparently she's the main character in the yes, billboard, but yes. like for the whole first episode, we just hear captive.
No, and things go horribly awry around her, like yeah. she's chained to a building that is getting just wrecked.
Yes.
I was thinking about, like, you know, one of the slowest parts of this episode was when he goes and sees his sister. And even then, it's really interesting because yeah. they're talking about the condition where she, like, will get, like, things mixed up in her mind and, like, experience pain from really simple activities, yeah. like holding a drumstick.
Yeah.
And she, like, felt like she was being cut by
a knife. Yeah. yeah.
And it was just like, oh, like, this is a really interesting thing, and yeah. I know we're going to see more of her going
forward. And we don't know why Elijah Wood seems to have zero hope that she'll recover, despite him having recovered.
Yeah.
yeah.
And he's clearly not affording her real meds or all her meds. There's so many tiny moving parts. The Rowdy Three stand around Dirk and do some kind of stare and pull energy out of his
right.
body.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that is not even remarked on.
Nope.
Like,
it just happened.
It just happened.
They pulled something out of there like they were Death Eaters. And yeah.
Seriously.
Yeah.
They stole the luck off of him or something.
A
like
a holistic assassin lady?
Oh, I love the holistic assassin.
She is also not, as far as I remember from junior high, she's also not in the books.
Oh, man. Because that is a great counterbalance to
She's a wonderful foil.
Amazing.
Yeah.
When she thanks the guy for coming, you said you'd kill me. If I yeah. didn't. Yeah, but it was really nice of you to choose this over death.
Over death.
Like, oh, she's amazing. I've never killed the wrong person, and I've killed a lot of people.
You know what's funny is this didn't feel like Douglas Adams, but in a way it did. Like, it's not like a Douglas Adams script or anything.
But it had a madcapness.
It had that anarchic, yeah, the thing that you loved about... You
know. Yes.
I love a show like this that says, we're doing something crazy... Just trust us and come along for
yeah.
the ride.
Yeah.
And I don't mean that in like a John from Cincinnati way.
No, not that crazy.
It feels like it has a direction and yeah. purpose, and I believe in this.
Yeah.
To kind of start pulling some of these pieces together.
I got to admit, guys, I downloaded this. It's free on iTunes. You get the first episode.
Yes.
And
it's also free on Amazon Prime.
Yeah, and numerous other things. You get the free first episode. You can find it. But I didn't expect to like this. It's BBC America has been really hit and miss for me.
Yeah.
And I was like, this, I don't think this is going to be for me. It'll be fine, but I'm not going to really like it. And now I'm like, man, I'm glad BBC America has an app on my Apple TV because I want to watch every episode of this.
Yeah, I expected to like it, but not... I didn't expect it to be like, no, I plan to watch the rest of this season. That was really fun.
It was really
fun. I really enjoyed that show.
Like, seriously, they introduced like 10 or 12 plot lines.
Yeah.
And... you know, some shows struggle to do two or three.
Yeah, it started to hit like a Smoking Aces level of chaos to it, where I went, all right, just roll this for a season.
And by the way, the guy they've got playing Dirk Gently, I don't know him from anywhere, but he's really good.
Really charming.
Yeah.
But there were at least two times in the episode where I thought, if that were a big dude in a blue suit, this would still work. Like, he's the doctor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's the Tick.
Yeah.
And granted, Elijah Wood's kind of typecast as Arthur, but I feel like they very much set up if you pulled Doctor Who to America and let him loose.
Yeah.
That this would kind of be it. I feel like Max Landis is going to write his own Doctor Who. Which is fine.
I'm in.
I'm in.
Meanwhile, over on The Walking Dead,
yeah.
Can you believe the numbers they got on this episode?
Wait.
We should talk about Crazy Ex-Girlfriend.
Okay, okay.
All right,
okay.
Yeah.
We'll hold off a little bit more on Walking Dead. Keep fucking with you guys.
This is just funny to us, by the way. But Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, we haven't talked about the show at all on this podcast, I don't think.
I think we're only talking about this for you.
I adore this show.
Oh, okay, okay.
I stack the decks. I love this show.
Ah, yeah.
So
gotcha.
I did not know. For one thing, I didn't know it was a musical. I would have watched it. I definitely didn't know it was... Rebecca Bloom? No. Rachel Bloom.
Yes. I didn't know her prior to this show.
All I know is that she did that song and that video, Fuck Me Ray Bradbury, which was hilarious. And if you haven't
seen this,
I have not seen that.
That's because it's so good.
This is your weird Greg thing.
If you haven't seen it, it's really funny and very sexy. And I fell in love with Rachel Bloom. I had no idea that she went on to do anything else. And then she's got this show where she's playing a lawyer who meets her ex from when she was age 16.
It's only tenuously an ex.
Yeah.
Like she dated him in summer camp
like
and he
months.
Broke up at the end.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But she moves from New York. She quits her high-powered lawyer job, moves from New York to the smaller town of West Covina, which is like an hour and a half from the beach, to join this small town legal team where they're all amazed to have her because she's this high-powered lawyer. And she's trying to get her ex-boyfriend, who has a fiance, back. And that's why they call the show Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. And she's trying to convince herself that she did not move there for Josh, her boyfriend, that was just a coincidence. And it really quickly comes out in the season one that no, she pretty much did move for this and she's a little crazy. And it's dealing with all that.
It's a little, there's something about Mary.
Yeah, there's a little bit of that, but it's also a musical. She goes into her own head and there's whole full blown musical numbers.
Yeah. It rides a really nice line between, is she like, is this a drama? Is she crazy?
Yeah.
Or is this just like cute? She's a little wacky.
And the thing is, it could easily be like offensive. Like, crazy woman is a stereotype that can be really offensive.
Even their theme song.
Yeah, that's so good. And they changed for this season. She's so good and so funny. And her best friend on the show is really good. Her boss is really good. It's got a great cast around
her. Well,
and
there are other people that point out to her, like, no, I can't help you do this.
Yeah, this is not okay.
That's not all right.
Yeah. You know, I have to say, based on my crush on Rachel Bloom and my crush on Lindsay over on You're the Worst, I'm a little bit glad that I'm married, because apparently my taste in single woman runs toward the psychotic.
A little bit. But the songs will be good.
Yeah, but I love the show. And the first season back, they end the first season with her and Josh sort of getting together. And so you're like, well, where are you going to go from here? They found a great way to go
from
here.
Yes, well, because at the very end, she says, oh, so I actually moved here for you.
I moved here for you, yeah. And he has that look in his face. But so Paula, her best friend, is like trying to wean herself off the crazy.
Yeah, I love the AA storyline of Paula trying to like wean herself off a drug.
And then the actual AA story of Greg, her friend and other ex.
Actually forgot Greg is actually in AA.
Did not see that coming, but wow, the way they lay it out, I'm like, yeah, that makes perfect sense.
That was beautifully done. Him sitting down with a sixer of orange soda with his dad.
Yeah.
And going, no, that's the kind of stuff you have to do because that's your routine and that's going to happen whether you're drinking or not.
That was really good and a surprising little dramatic moment in an otherwise really funny show. And also they had that great Love Colonels, which was her Beyonce-esque, yes. that she makes the joke halfway through, like, we blew our budget on this. It's a really fun show. If you don't like musicals, you will hate this show.
Oh, but, well, yeah. then.
But during the first season, I started noticing several of these songs getting posted on my Facebook feed, yeah. Like they were Garfunkel & Oates songs or something.
Yeah, because it's got that.
And I... After I think like the third one where I went, okay, this is the same. This is clearly the same woman and the same group of people that have made like three of the goofy viral songs I've liked in the last 2 weeks. And I realized I had this show on Hulu. And so I ended up inadvertently watching most of it on a Saturday.
Yeah. I burned through it on Netflix when it came to Netflix. I've been hearing about it and it's really great. And I really love this show. And I think if you like stuff like Flight of the Conchords and that kind of thing, you would definitely like Crazy Ex-Girlfriend.
I do like Flight of the Conchords.
What would you think if it had a lot more music?
I don't know. Maybe. Maybe. Yeah, I hear such good things.
It's maybe the same amount of songs per episode.
Yeah, maybe.
All right. You guys finally ready to talk some Walking Dead?
Yeah, let's talk about Walking Dead because I hear there was some crazy... Yeah.
Don't spoil it, though, for me yet.
Oh,
because you want to talk about Westworld?
Yeah, let's talk about Westworld.
Okay.
Which I've not watched, so spoil that.
Let's get to Westworld. Okay, so we're on episode 4. I don't remember the title of this episode, unless you do.
Dissonance Theory, I believe.
Dissonance Theory. But Thandi Newton,
oh man,
at the end of this, or is it Thandi Newton? I don't know.
It's Thandi Newton, sounds right.
That was such a powerful scene.
Yeah.
Where, just... her controlling the situation, how she's interacting with him, her having all these notes of this, drawings of this spaceman.
Yeah.
And then the cutting and kissing, like all of it. I was just like, so powerful.
Yeah, it was really good.
That was such an exciting ending to that.
Yeah, that whole story. What I love about Westworld, they keep adding characters. They keep adding characters and stories, and at no point have I felt like, hey, that's enough. I'm like, no, throw it on. Keep adding.
They're like, hey, Game of Thrones did this. You guys are primed now. Yeah. We can have as many characters as we need, and you guys will roll with it.
And there's just like, we still don't know who the Man in Black is.
No, but
they're giving us
hints. It was really cool, his whole escape from the prison, because he's...
Oh, that was awesome.
He's an expert video game player at this point.
He's got God mode.
Yeah.
He calls in for help, and they're like, okay, acknowledge.
This guy wants to use explosives. I love that little scene where he was going to blow that thing up,
and
they have to allow that, and it shows us that they still have some degree of control of this world. But speaking of control, Anthony Hopkins, Ford or whatever, his... scene with the head of QA, the lady that comes to talk to him, where she's trying to, you know, make a power play against him and be like, you know what, I'm going to report what you're doing because you're behind schedule. And he's just like, you know, it's funny, when we brought in the money people, my partner thought that things were going to change, but it's... what you don't realize is that we're not just like controlling robots.
Yeah.
We know how to control everyone.
Yeah.
And we understand how people work. And he's we wouldn't have brought you guys in unless we could control you.
He's like, hey, how about instead of you making a power play, I tell you I can stop time and destroy the place you were when you were a kid.
Yeah. It was just like, holy shit. It was such an awesome scene.
Yeah.
And like all of Bernard's kind of sneaking around his shenanigans.
Yeah.
Ford seems to know about that even.
Yeah.
He knows about all of it.
Well, you want to hear another theory?
This is
from theringer.com, from the Watch podcast. They have a theory that Bernard's a robot, that he's an AI. That talk he had with his wife is to keep him under control. That he's like Ford's experiment, and that the corporate lady knows that, and she's using him as like a sex bot.
She knows it too.
She would know.
Having only seen the first episode, I could still actually believe that Bernard's a robot.
It can make sense, right?
Yeah.
Like, I'm not 100% sold on the theory, but it's an interesting theory.
I can believe that Ford would think it would be neat to build a robot that programs the robots.
I do. Yeah. Exactly. There's so much Anthony Hopkins' character we haven't seen yet, and I love that.
Yeah,
he would make a robot that like has this tragic backstory of the son.
Yeah,
and that's kind of what drives him to give humanity to other robots.
That's one of the things he said, is like, when he talks to him about his son, there's this line. It might just be clunky dialogue, but from this show, I don't believe it. Where he says something like, "Yes, you still miss your son," and gives his name, and it's like, instead of being like something a human says to another human, it sounds like a command prompt. It's like he's reminding him about his backstory. And it's very similar to what he did to give Wyatt to Marsden's character. And that's an interesting catch. I don't know if that's true, but it's an interesting theory.
Damn, well, and how dude. Subtle they sneak in the command lines.
Yeah.
When I rewatched the first episode, when he shuts down the old
yeah.
robot, the old prospector looking bartender yeah. that he's drinking yeah. with, and he shuts deep in dreamless sleep, and you see a couple of people do that,
yeah.
but they slip those things into deep like straight into the sentence.
It sounds like it doesn't sound like a command line. It sounds yeah. like they're just talking to you. Yeah.
The show, just the web gets deeper yeah. and more complex,
yeah.
and I'm loving it.
I am 100% in love with the show.
Every time a show like this airs, and I think I'm doing an enormous amount of the heavy lifting for this show. That I am going to yeah. make this so much cooler in my head than where they're actually going to go.
Yeah.
And, you know, as they actually close off plot lines, I'm going to get more and more disappointed.
I've definitely run into that.
And I swear I'm not going to do this every damn
yeah.
time,
yeah.
but they know how to do it to me. This is an amazing show.
What
and
if I told you there's time travel in this?
Oh, damn you.
I got
now,
all your money.
Will they invent a time machine so I can watch peak television? Jesus.
Speaking of peak television, let's finally go ahead and get into it. We're done with the gag. We're done jerking you around just like Walking Dead did to us.
Yeah, that's yep. That's what I was going to say. I didn't watch it because I haven't watched Walking Dead in a while.
Yeah.
But I did hear people saying, like, what did they do? Like, flash? Oh, spoilers. We're going to spoil the hell out of Walking Dead.
There's no
intro.
Way to discuss this episode yeah. without that, I
yeah.
don't think.
So if you're not caught up on Walking Dead, if you don't want to get spoiled, come back and listen to this later. This is the last segment of the episode.
Yes.
That's why we arranged it the way we did. We just did the intro because Les came up with it and I thought it'd be funny.
Well, and it's how the episode is infuriatingly structured.
Yeah. So, yeah, at the end of last season, it pissed off a lot of fans because they held off on the big kill until this season.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess you stopped at like
I stopped
two,
in
right?
like the yeah, midway through season 2 when
Which
it started getting really really slow.
Fucking boring.
Yeah, and then season 3 caught crap
fucking boring.
And so I just never got back into it.
I have for some reason hate watched this show for this long.
I know a bunch of people who just grinded through it.
And this is a show that it will occasionally do a couple episodes really well. And then it'll just kind of go back into, like, a lot of boring. Like, the past two seasons, not a whole lot happened.
It seemed like filler show.
But a lot of people do not like this episode that came back.
I will say that was an amazingly powerful episode of television. I had not watched this show in obviously, like, 6 years, 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
But I knew who Negan was from the comics, and mm-hmm. I knew roughly what was coming. And you don't need to know the connections between these people for that episode to have worked.
It was powerful.
It was powerful. I don't want to watch the show anymore, really. And I really hated that episode, but it was powerful.
I did not know who would actually die. Like other people.
Someone had actually spoiled that for me before.
Yeah. And we'll go. Yeah. It was Glenn. And it was Abraham.
Both of them had been spoiled for
me. Oh yeah. So I didn't know who it was going to be at all.
Oh, I didn't know about Abraham.
Oh, yeah.
I don't care, but I was curious.
He was the first one, and then Glenn is the crueler to me.
Yeah, they did Abraham, and then as a result, Daryl punches Negan, and that costs him another person. So
it was a
double whammy that really gets the audience.
Yeah, and so Glenn is where Abraham is an eeny, meeny, miny, moe that drags on, and you get this long, like, bat-in-the-face tension of every single person who's going to be. Glenn is I told you not to do that. Whap!
Oh, geez.
And, and it was just your heart sinking moment.
And it takes a while.
Like, yeah, they prompt for Abraham, but they waited 20 minutes into the episode to even show this too. Like they really just kind of kept screwing with the audience. My big takeaway though was, I was amazed by this episode. Like, a lot of people hate this. A lot of people were just like disgusted and hate it. But this is a show and a brutal, brutal fucking gory killing that made me feel something. And I have not, like the last time I was like thinking about, like, when have I felt like a death that powerfully in a show? And I was thinking, when Gladys gets stoned to death in The Leftovers, that was a pretty fucking powerful murder.
Yeah, I didn't watch Leftovers.
Oh, right. Man. That was a rough one.
So Gladys dies.
It'll be a surprise because you won't know her name until after she dies. But then 6 Feet Under, I think of like the death of that one dude's wife. Mm-hmm. That, like in the
Grant, I haven't watched all of 6 feet under. That one dude's wife dies.
Damn. I figured that was vague enough. But yeah, it was just Glenn and Maggie. Their relationship is like the only successful relationship I think they've really shown on this. I think they still fail with the relationship between Rick and Carl, his son, in this show. And I'm like, that should be the easiest, but. I think Carl isn't that great of an actor.
No, but the moment that kid had in this episode, I think, was the best thing I'd...
Where he's like, just cut it, do it.
Just do it, Dad.
Yeah.
Like, the structure of the episode, to me, I didn't enjoy the episode simply because I hate Negan to a degree that I don't want to watch... This show can't kill him fast enough for this to be a satisfying experience for me.
Yeah.
It's too much. He's too unlikable, and I'm not going to grind through even two more episodes to watch him die, and there's no way they kill him within three.
No, they're not. It's going to go on.
It's going to go the whole season. I can't do it.
But, dude, here's what's kind of interesting.
But I felt it.
Yeah. What's interesting is the past two seasons they've spent where they've kind of been going along the path that of where Negan is. Rick has strayed past the moral line where he's basically become a... killer for hire for other people. He's like, hey, I'll protect you and I'll take out anyone who's threatening you. And so they've been going in and like mercenaries, just killing people. And they killed a bunch of Negan's men kind of in brutal ways, like Negan's doing to them. But, you know, there are heroes. And so we mm-hmm. root for them. Whereas you get Negan, like either they keep going on that path of being these people who just kill anyone because, you know, that's the world we live in, and that's the rationale that Rick finally had to come to.
And so this is the relativistic wall that they've run into.
Yeah, it's either we go there or we have to put an exclamation point to stop that for some reason and stop that for the audience and stop it for Rick and his crew.
Yeah.
And they did that in the most brutal fashion. So
and
I
in that sense,
like
I feel like that worked.
It had, it had a successful effect.
Yeah, because this definitely recalibrates the core groups. What are we fighting for? Why are we still alive? If this is civilization, I mean,
yeah.
When they, over the course of this episode, start to realize the full scope of Negan's organization, and I still don't think they've really grasped how big a warlord this asshole is.
Yeah.
But we'll leave you a truck because you're going to scavenge up a bunch of great stuff. And I'm just going to send a group of people back, not me, in a week. Mm-hmm. And if you fuck with them, I will send you pieces of Daryl back. Like he has it down.
This
is not his first.
Kind of. He's crazy and brutal, but he's smart.
Yes. All I kept thinking was every single person putting a gun to the back of these people's heads has been on their knees with their group.
Mm-hmm.
At a previous point. And I hope, I still don't know if I can make it through to actually watch this happen, but I really hope that that's going to be the chink in it, is that
someone
everyone else in that organization is where Rick is.
They just need
you're not, there's no fully broken. You still want to kill that. I mean, there's no way Rick still doesn't want to kill him.
Yeah.
Like there's no broken enough.
See, that's the other issue I kind of had. Like they have Rick like go with him into the trailer so he can break him, right? Take him out there, and you know, I thought he was actually gonna like physically break him. But instead he just kinda like makes him do a silly task, which is kind of killing time in the episode. It felt more like.
But it also felt like it was an emotionally abusive creepy, go get me my axe, and then I'll act nice to you, and I'll give you the axe back, and you work for me so solidly now that I'm going to hand you an axe over a kitchen table, and you're not going to fucking swing it at me. You're going to take it.
It was a good power play, yeah.
And as a power play, it was creepy as hell, and all I kept thinking was all my friends that went, hey, this isn't on HBO. Why is there that much skin hanging off the end of that bat? Why is there that much blood running off this thing? All I kept thinking was if this had been show run by the Game of Thrones folks, Rick had been raped as fuck right now.
even implied that that's what's going to happen with Daryl.
And he'd have not made it out of that van without a sex scene, I don't think.
Yeah. Well, I thought that when they have him get the choice of cut off Carl's arm or, you know, everyone else dies here, the Rick we know, despite everything for the past seven seasons, wouldn't have hesitated. And it would have sent such a powerful message right back to Negan if he just picked that axe up and went, chop, done. Yep. Saved everyone else. Sorry you lost your arm, son, but this is survival. Because that's all he's preached. Well, it's all about survival.
And if Carl had looked over and gone, all right.
Yeah.
That scared the shit out of Negan.
Yeah. And that's what I kind of felt like should have happened. But I get that what they ultimately needed for the rest of the story in this season is that they want Rick broken so that they can build him back up, whatever.
And Daryl isn't, at this point in the comics, Daryl's not still there.
Yeah, Daryl does not in the comics. Yeah.
Daryl never was.
Daryl's never in the comics, right? Yeah, like he's just for the show.
Yeah.
So I always wonder at any moment, like, is Daryl come and go? Like even in the first season, I was kind of wondering, like, I mean, when we were still looking for Merle,
Carl are like too much of fan favorites.
But yeah, I don't know who the ships are.
Love him. Yeah, yeah. They would.
But no, there's so many Daryl dies and we riot shirts I've seen.
Yeah.
But I don't know who all the ships are other than Maggie and Glenn. But Maggie was the best audience proxy for me in this episode when they're all just silent crying after Negan's men leave and Maggie stands up and they're like, no, you're shaky. You should sit down. And she goes, no, we have to get ready. I'm like, ready for what? To fight them.
Yeah.
Like, Maggie's ready to spend the next week not sleeping, preparing weapons. We're doing this.
Yeah. Like, look, I lost everything there. So
I don't care if it kills Daryl. I don't care if we die trying. We're doing this. And that's where I was. Opie's death in Sons of Anarchy.
Oh, yeah.
I was walking through the living room.
Wait, Opie dies in Sons of Anarchy?
So I'm walking through the living room.
This was a rough one, too.
And I turned towards the TV during that episode and it clicked like, oh, shit, what's about to happen? And I stood with a drink in my hand in my living room and watched Opie's death scene and cried. And it was just one of those, like, caught me off guard how powerful moments. And I spent a good half of this Walking Dead episode not having watched this show in like 6 years standing. Going, no, this is the most emotionally abusive, realistic, doing it in the flashbacks, having him have to climb up onto the roof of the van to get the axe, which gives him a moment to lay there. It's like you said, it sinks that death in a way that, I remember when Fight Club came out, it got railed against for the violence, and people said, like, it's socially irresponsible to make a movie that's this violent. Only one person dies in all of Fight Club, and you learn his name. Yeah. But at the same time, Schwarzenegger's, I think, Collateral Damage, or one of Schwarzenegger's movies came out, 200-something people died by gunshot. You don't learn a single one of their names. It's meaningless. 200 people die. But Fight Club, Robert Paulson dies, and it's powerful.
Yeah.
And
how funny.
And I kind of felt the same way in Walking Dead of like for all the zombies and all the shit and all the death that is on this show and all the gore, this show managed to make an episode where the gore stood out to me and the emotional death stood out to me.
So will you guys, are you back on board, Grant? Are you going to watch?
I have to watch at least a few more episodes. I'm very curious because I think this is what it needed. It needed a foe like we had the governor, and I felt like the governor was kind of limp or cartoonish at times.
Yeah.
Like in the comic, he's riding a tank. He's got an eye patch.
Yeah.
He's was cartoonish. That David Morse?
And he's a lot tamer in the TV show, but it still just wasn't like that good of a character because the menace wasn't fully felt.
Right.
Like in the comic, at least, it's terrible. They have him just mercilessly raping Michonne.
And yeah, that's awful.
And I quit the comic for the first time.
There. Yeah.
But then, like, a little bit more, she staples his dick to the floor and, like, chops him the fuck up.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, that's kind of awesome. And, oh, shit, what's happened to me that I'm rooting for that being awesome? It's fucked up what it does. But, I think the comic does an interesting job of kind of challenging us on all these, like, really fucked up things.
Yeah.
But here we have Negan that's an actual formidable villain who is... He's fucking scary.
Yeah.
He will do the most brutal things and then crack jokes and he's fucking charming. It's Jeffrey Dean Morgan.
And that's what's emotionally abusive to me about it is him palling with Rick like this is all okay.
Yeah.
And you're not making me or I'm not making you do it. I'm not doing anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're gonna have to do it.
Oh shit, look at his eye popping out.
Yeah.
Like while like everyone else is just stunned, your heart's in your stomach, and Glenn is just like barely able to say Maggie, and it's just like, oh
God. Oh God, Glenn. Oh my God.
It was just so hard to watch, and I couldn't stop thinking about it like for days after.
But I genuinely
it's a powerful episode,
genuinely believe that Negan believes he's sorry when he looks at Maggie and realizes, like, oh man, y'all were in a relationship. I am so sorry. And as much as he has ever truly felt sorry, like, I believe that that character is that sociopath. This is the most that apology is as sincere as he has ever given.
Yeah.
Like, I won't say that he has ever actually felt remorse.
The other girl lick the blood off of that in like a very phallic way after he bashed in Abraham. Wasn't caring as much there.
No, but then suddenly he gets this weird well, damn, yeah, then I know this is hard for y'all. Like, what the fuck? Yes, you being terrible is difficult.
Yeah, like his whole thing of, like, you guys can cry if you need to, but don't scream and don't get up. Pretty much, like, I'm glad for them to have a direction because, you know, the zombies have always just been kind of an excuse for them to explore when humans are put in terrible situations, like how they turn on each other and how they problem solve. And I think that the show has generally done kind of a terrible job of exploring a lot of those things. This is one of the few very successful ones where they've done it.
The clever conceit and the beauty of the comic is that it is what all zombie movies are about. The zombies are aimless things that you can shove off of you or shoot in the head or whatever. Yes, the monsters are us. Like, desperate humans in the apocalypse are far scarier than zombies that have literally one goal and that are slow shuffling. And so the other people have always been the scary thing, but yeah, Negan is that's an incredibly solid villain.
Yeah.
To the point that
I never want to watch that episode again.
Yeah. To the point that I care about this show again, and I may not be able to watch it.
Yeah.
Can I tell you guys why I'm not watching it?
Because it's been terrible.
Not British enough.
Not
British enough. You know.
And we're out. Oh, Jesus.
So we do need to talk about one thing.
Okay.
We have a regular feature here where we talk about the Parents Television Council and what they think about TV.
Of course we got to.
So first of all, if you're listening, anyone from PTC, fuck yourselves.
I've learned so much about the parental rating system in the last 2 days because I don't have kids and never cared.
I have kids and I don't care. Here's the thing. I don't let my kids watch The Walking Dead. You know why? Because it's not for kids. I don't let my kids read The Walking Dead because it's not for kids. I work in a comic shop. I own a comic shop. I see people come in and the kids are clearly watching The Walking Dead and the parents are buying them the comics. And I'm always kind of silently judging them because I'm like, that kid is too young for this. Like, if your kid's a teenager and watches other stuff like that, if they're sophisticated enough for it, that's fine. But if your kid's like 8 or 9, they should not be watching Walking Dead just because they like zombies.
You sell them those comics?
I do.
You're like a
I'm a terrible person.
You know that your kid should not be drinking, but here's the point.
But my 9-year-old likes Plant vs. Zombies. That doesn't mean you should watch Walking Dead.
No.
I just the Parents Television Council got all up in arms about this. And the thing is, this is definitely not a show for kids. At no point have they ever said this show is for kids.
Remember when they chopped up a bunch of bodies and spread them all the bloody bodies all over themselves and walked down the street?
I'm sorry, you mean episode 1?
Yeah.
It was episode 3, like at 4.
Right. Remember when they shot that little girl zombie in the head? You know, episode 1?
Yeah.
Now, people do dumb stuff. When I saw Zombieland in the theater, at the opening of it, when somebody runs across the baseball field and he goes, oh, that poor fat bastard. Rule 1 cardio. I watched a woman and 5 children stand up like the Partridge Family, like staggering age, like perfect gradient line of kids and curse the whole way out. I can't believe it. Like, it's called fucking Zombieland. What did you think it was going to open with?
I thought it was just going to be Bill Murray.
Like, they don't eat vegetables. They eat other people. It's spoiler alert. Zombies eat people.
Yeah.
I had no idea. I assume that there are parental controls and that's a thing that exists, but I literally never looked into this except to make sure that it was not accidentally turned on anything I own.
Right.
But I have learned since from friends that apparently at first The Walking Dead was rated TV-14, which I grew up with HBO and saw Eddie Murphy Raw way too young and watched all the Nightmare on Elm Streets. Like, I was that kid. Like, I stayed up for Skinamax. So I don't know what's appropriate. I also don't have children. I have no idea what's appropriate. But TV-14 seemed fine to me. They moved it up to TVMA, but that means that some of the episodes in reruns slip through people's parental controls.
Right.
I still find this to be a bullshit excuse because I know someone who has their Roku set up with their parental controls so that anything unrated and anything not TVG, they have to put a pin in. That's a pain in the ass, but yeah. They have kids and I don't.
Yeah.
I'm sort of the opinion that if your kid can figure out and watch the show, they're old enough to have to deal with it.
Yep.
Yeah, that's kind of, yeah.
If they're old enough to disobey you and watch it after you tell them don't watch it, then yeah, they're old enough to deal with it, and then you talk to them about it.
Yeah. Yeah, and if you were watching the show with them and with your full consent, and this was too far, what have you been watching up to this point?
This was one of the worst things I've ever seen on television.
Sure, yep. But it's been nihilistic.
up there with Oberyn.
But it's been
Martell.
This was more than Hostel.
But it's been nihilistic and awful from the beginning. Like the psychological stuff has always been there.
Yep.
It's a brutal, awful show.
I get how this seems different to them, but it's really not.
No. To be clear,
as a parent, and Grant knows this too, we've had plenty of parent shaming. You get parents shamed all the time, people judging the way you do things. I'm not shaming any parent who lets their kid watch the show if they know their kid and know that it's appropriate for them.
Yeah, I mean, I only murder hobos. Clearly, I was fine to watch these things as a kid.
Everybody murders hobos.
You know, I grew up to be a fine adult.
But
you guys had wonderful childhoods.
You know, if your kid, if you're okay with your kid watching Walking Dead and you were fine with it and you're fine with this episode, that's fine. But if you were fine with it up to this point and now you want to get mad at Walking Dead for being what Walking Dead is, that's crazy.
Yeah, the people that have been like these long-term fans that are like, I'm finally done.
Yeah.
I'm like, that one did it?
Yeah.
I mean, it's been that way.
Yeah.
I've been kind of disappointed. This energized it for me in a weird way.
This is why I've quit The Walking Dead 4 or 5 times, comic and show, is because it gets so nihilistic and it gets to a point where I'm just like, I can't watch it anymore. And something always brings me back. You're not getting me back on this one. This doesn't appeal to me enough, but I can't deny hearing you guys talk about it. I'm like, that sounds interesting.
I care about this show again, but I still don't think I'm going to watch it.
Yeah.
I completely get that.
It feels like Requiem for a Dream. Great movie that I will not sit through again.
Oh, yeah. Jeez.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Well, let's wrap it up there. Thank you guys both, Les and Randy, for joining me this week.
Thanks, Grant.
And thank you, fans, for listening to us, for, you know, sharing out the episode, for the people on Patreon that support us. Thank you guys so much. And until next week.
TV Dudes out. Holy crap, I remembered it.
Boom.
The TV Dudes is an independently run podcast. It is exclusively listener supported. If you'd like to help us out, go to patreon.com/TV Dudes. You can like us on Facebook and on Twitter @TV Dudes and help us out on iTunes by giving us a 5-star rating and writing a review. To find out more about us, go to thetvdudes.com. I'm Grant Davis. Thanks for listening.